Hello, this is Barbara Fink, and welcome to Library Out Loud at the Albert Wisner Library. Today's guest is Rosemary Cooper, director of the Albert Wisner Public Library. Rosemary has been a librarian for 40 years, holding positions in Southern California, Vermont, and Idaho. She has been director here at Albert Wisner for 19 years. During that time, the library moved into its new location on McFarland Drive in the Village of Warwick, significantly enlarging its space. Under her direction, the library was awarded the 2016 Best Small Library in America by Library Journal, with funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as well as being one of the recipients of the 2017 American Library Association's I Love My Librarian Award. Rosemary, welcome to Library Out Loud.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This is a special year because it is our 10-year anniversary.
Absolutely.
In this building.
Yeah, it's very exciting, Barbara. Yeah.
So when we moved into this building 10 years ago, it must have been exciting, but also a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it wasn't just 10 years ago that was a challenge. It was about 5 years before that in the whole process. So moving in was kind of the culmination
sure.
of a lot of hard work.
Okay. And so then you had the challenge, though, of filling this bigger space mm-hmm. with our collection.
Absolutely. We thought a lot about that. We thought a lot about what libraries were going to be like in the future, how people were using them then, but how we sort of had a sense that they were going to be using them in the next several years, if not this decade that has passed. So we had to look at the collection. We had to look also at the furnishings and the shelving and what we needed where, that kind of thing.
And so today I'd like to talk a little bit about the thought that goes into organizing a collection, mm-hmm. in particular the nonfiction collection.
Okay.
Of course, going way back, the Dewey Decimal System is used mm-hmm. in order to categorize a collection. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Dewey Decimal System does and how that helps patrons find material?
Yeah, sure. I can tell you a lot about it. I'm a librarian. I studied classes and classification. The Dewey Decimal System is just one of many classification systems out there, not necessarily just for books, but for material. And it was actually founded by Melville Dewey, who was a librarian. He was actually one of the founding members of the American Library Association, and in the late 1860s, he published a little pamphlet, which wasn't terribly long, that was going to give some kind of general guidelines to libraries to actually start organizing and shelving their material a little bit differently than they had been. And so you might ask, well, how had they been shelving the material before that? Well, they had been shelving mostly by what we in the library world called the acquisition number. Anytime a material gets brought into a library, it doesn't happen so much now, but it did then, it would get stamped with a number, and they would then file them on their shelves by those numbers. And so if you were looking for a particular book, they would look for the acquisition number and then go to the shelf for that particular number. Mm-hmm. So they were in order, basically, by number, and in some cases by size. You know, there may have been some anomalies or differences, but that was just generally how libraries were arranging their collections. Mm-hmm. It was kind of an inventory. Maybe some manufacturers do the same thing with widgets and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it became somewhat a topic of discussion in the library field was, well, wouldn't it be nice if people could come into the library and actually browse the collection and maybe mm-hmm. find all the books on gardening in the same place, not by their acquisition number or by their size or their color or some other mm-hmm. Ways that maybe they had been organized. And in fact, just a little sidebar, Barbara, is the New York Public Library still actually organizes its collection by size. It's not a browsing collection.
Very interesting.
And so if you go there and you look up a book that you would like to get here in 2019, you're going to give a special number to their person at the desk who is then going to send it down to shoot, and they're going to find it. But it is not done by the Dewey Decimal or any other subject orient or a classification system. But the Dewey Decimal System was one of the first, of course, and became probably the most popular, though it has some competition from the Library of Congress classification system these days, to create collections that were basically browsable. So you would find material, nonfiction. I mean, fiction is still actually cataloging by the author's last name in most cases, even though it does have its own Dewey Decimal Number, and it could be in with the regular nonfiction. Mm-hmm. So the purpose of the Dewey Decimal System was to create a collection, a way to access collections by the subject matter of the material and make them easy for people to browse.
Mm-hmm. And then going forward, even into the 1980s and then into the 2000s, some libraries were actually starting to move away from Dewey into classifications you've spoken about so far, but into even different kinds of classifications, or a hybrid approach using Dewey and something else. Mm-hmm. And sometimes this is called genrefication. Subject-based organizing. Was that something that was on your mind for our library going forward?
Well, going forward, you know, of course, we moved here in 2009, so you actually had a starting date there of like the 1980s when that was being discussed and thought about. And so just to sort of kind of finish the history of Dewey, Dewey we have in the late 1860s, 70s, and it was a four-page pamphlet when he first published it. By the 1980s, there were 23 different editions of 800 or 900 pages in terms of the classification system. And so it had evolved and grown into a rather complex and somewhat, in some cases, controversial way of organizing information. And so people started to think, well, I have this little library, or maybe this isn't really very helpful. But more important, what actually happened in the 1980s, and I think what triggered a lot of this changing and approaching subject classification, was this continued push to make libraries more like bookstores, more browsable. Bookstores organize their information. People like to go there and look for things. Why can't libraries be more like that? Mm-hmm. There was also some emphasis at that time in the early 1980s about making our library's service more focused on the bookstore mentality, you know, just continuing to meet popular demand and letting the popular demand drive the collection rather than a group of very well-educated librarians sitting around with magazines about books getting to decide what should be in a collection. So they went hand in hand, and they began very slowly. Libraries did begin to, it was a daunting task, I have to say. I've been a librarian since 1977, so I have lived through this era. And it's a daunting task to think about recreating the Dewey Decimal System in a library, which even though it's flawed, and has some drawbacks and can sometimes have overlapping and confusing places where books are in one number but also in another. It was what we had, and to create something brand new just seemed really, really challenging. And that was why there was this movement to sort of say, well, we don't have to recreate it. It's already been done. They do something like this in bookstores. Let's see if maybe we can come up with that. But what happened was, we didn't just use the bookstore model. There were some libraries out there that decided that they were going to sort of come up with their own little method, that maybe they had an extra staff member around who needed a job to do. So they were able to come up with, you know, yet another way of doing it, something innovative. People always trying to make their mark, I guess, in the world. That was, you know, it's 2019 now, and many libraries to put their toes into that kind of thing. I really don't see a lot of them abandoning the Dewey Decimal System. Mm-hmm. I think it's still being used quite a bit, but there are some efforts to say, let's try to figure out how to make maybe the collection a little bit more browsable. So, yes, to answer your question in a long-winded way, sorry, Yes, you do consider that all the time. I mean, we are a public library. We're here to provide information, and access to that information is an important part of what we do. And that the way collections are arranged are an enormous part of that access.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I went actually back to our strategic plan, and one of our goals was to, quote, create a responsive, adaptable, and enriching library experience for the entire community, close quote. The word adaptable pops out of that, certainly.
Sure.
And I think adapting to our patrons' needs is a priority. And I've noticed that as patrons come in, they'd really rather just browse and find what they want without having to ask for help. Although, of course, we're always available to help
them. Yes, we are.
And they can maybe only go to a certain point, but I think they really do like that autonomy. So I can see where a hybrid approach, though, to kind of ease into that more like shopping experience could be beneficial.
Absolutely. I mean, you know that one of the lovely advantages we have as staff at a library is that we're also users of a library. So we know what it is that makes sense to us, too. And we also can observe the behavior of others. And I think you hit on a very important point when you said people like to do these things themselves. And there's many reasons why. But part of what's so special about the library experience, as opposed to, let's say, the online experience, although maybe someone would argue with me about this, is sort of the serendipitous experience you have when you come to a library. You don't really know what you want. Mm-hmm. You just know you're sort of interested in finding out about gardening, and you want, you know, or you have a pest in your garden, and so you start browsing in that collection, and you realize that it doesn't just talk about the pest problems. There's other things that may be of interest to you, how to build a birdhouse, you know, how to compost. It expands around the way the Dewey Decimal System arranges and the way the classification system arranges things, and so that you're able to broaden your own search when you're doing that. If you're looking for something very specific, of course, the catalog and the help from librarians can help you really narrow that down. But that's really, I mean, Dewey's first experience and goal in 1870s is really true today. I mean, we're just trying to make it easier for people to locate what they're looking for. They also, one of the reasons why people enjoy doing this themselves is often very much has to do with the little or very big important point in libraries, which is privacy. People don't always like to come up and say what it is that they're looking for, because it may in some ways expose a certain part of themselves or a situation they might be dealing with. And so to have things together in a subject matter that they can browse through freely on their own without, you know, worrying about any kind of judgment or just an exposure that makes them uncomfortable. So we're trying to eliminate barriers towards people's being able to access the information that they need. It could be something as simple as weeding your garden, but it also could be something as monumental to a person as a death of a child, or it could be having to deal with their own health scares or cancer situations. It could be, you know, there's a wide gamut of information. And so our collection, you know, the way it is now, by and large, the way it's arranged now is by the Dewey Decimal System. And we've always found that that's been somewhat challenging in browsing, even though it is subject-based. And so while we haven't completely abandoned it, we have begun to look at opportunities to create collections that would reflect the interests and the needs of our community that would be a kind of a hybrid. I think you mentioned, what did you say? We still use the Dewey Decimal System, but we bring like material that people may be looking for, and I'm certainly happy to talk about those collections if you'd like me to.
Yeah, we have now four different subject collections.
We do.
And how did that come to be? Did it begin with poetry?
No.
Or it began with
Mew
collection. Yes.
It began with the mental and emotional wellness collection, which had to do with the idea was behind that collection was to bring all the material, or as much as we possibly could, in formats, and also, you know, various formats, books on CD, DVDs, and also pamphlet information and online information. We actually, it's as broad as that. And we were bringing there all of the material that we could find that would be of interest to people who are struggling with these types of diagnoses, not only for themselves but their family, with a mental illness diagnosis. When I say these types, it's what I mean. And there's a broad range of those, as well as some of the what is considered the co-occurring kind of occurrences with mental illness, which have a lot to do with the self-medication that takes place when people suffer from mental illness, mm-hmm. as it relates to addiction and other obsessive compulsive behavior disorders and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And in order, if you're looking for that information in a traditional Dewey collection, you walk upstairs and you will be in the 100s, the 200s, the 300s, the 600s, mm-hmm. and sometimes even the 700s and 800s. Mm-hmm. Now, for someone like myself who could probably roll off the Dewey numbers at the top of my head, that doesn't really provide much of a barrier. However, for the average person, it does. And so we brought all this material together in a special, and we put it in a special collection. We have it downstairs in its own little corner. We also include pamphlet material where there's a lot of very valuable information on these topics in much more easily digestible formats in pamphlets rather mm-hmm. than 200 or 300 page books. And we have put it all there for use and find that it has hit a chord that people are grateful for. They do give us the feedback that mm-hmm. they find information there that they would have a difficult time possibly asking about.
And I don't know if this was meant to be, but it's placed in a rather private, mm-hmm. quiet part of the library.
Yeah, that was somewhat intentional. You know, we have limited space here. We're mm-hmm. trying to find the spot, but we thought that would be an advantage too, so that it gives people the opportunity to sit there and browse and look through the material. And it's a wide range of information. And I mentioned that we also created an online resource that has a lot of access to information as well for people. So that's off of our website. So mm-hmm. so it is, I think, a perfect beginning for us in this kind of hybrid collection. We did not abandon the Dewey Decimal System. Mm-hmm. All the numbers are still on the books, except they're now all together
yes.
by subject with a special indication, so that when you research those in the catalog, you'll know where that collection is. You'll mm-hmm. know that book is in that collection. And you'll know when it comes back to put it in that collection, you know, mm-hmm. all the things that libraries have to do to mm-hmm. maintain some
yeah.
type of order
that goes
sort of unknown or unpaid attention to by the average person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then came poetry.
Okay. Now, poetry, I think, is actually a little more, it's for a different reason that the poetry collection is separate. There's two compelling or driving forces behind the creation of that collection. One was that we have a lot of poets in our community.
Oh, indeed.
We have mm-hmm. a lot of actual published poets, and poetry is a great interest to a lot of people in our community. So it seemed to me that would be a lovely collection, not only as a way of putting all the poetry together, but also to showcase the writings of our local poets. Mm-hmm. So you may notice at the end of the poetry collection, there is actually a section just for our local poets' work mm-hmm. that's been published. But the reason that was created was because you'd say, well, why can't it just be in the regular Dewey number for poetry?
Mm-hmm.
Because isn't that all the same number? I'll say, no, it's not all the same number. So here's one of the drawbacks of the Dewey Decimal System. The 800s is the number that deals with literature, okay? But it's divided by Melville Dewey and all of his infinite frustrating wisdom in this case, by country of origin. So English
okay.
poetry is an 821, American poetry is an 811, Russian poetry, you know, is an 897. So you're all over the 800. So if you go to the 800 collection in our library, very small collection here, but in some libraries rather large, you're going to be wandering through several shelves trying mm-hmm. to find just the poetry. Mm-hmm. So now, if it's poetry, no matter what number it is, and it's always in the 800s, but it's not in the same number, mm-hmm. it's over in that collection. Mm-hmm. So it's now been, and it also includes biographies of poets. It includes books that are about critical analysis of poetry, which are in yet another Dewey Decimal
yes.
number.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
so, and it includes books on how to write poetry. So it's a collection that celebrates poetry and the writing and reading and understanding mm-hmm. And interpretations that take place, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. So it's, you really have an opportunity to get broader in what you put together in a specific
yes,
collection.
Yes, there's books on CD there, as there are in the ME in the MU collection. There are DVDs in that collection. PBS just did a great series on poetry, celebrating poetry. That's in that collection. Mm-hmm. We actually have a magazine on poetry in that collection. Mm-hmm. So it really, we're able to really take what I think Melville Dewey initially intended, which was to allow people to browse in an area that they're interested in, and we do it so that they can browse related and not restricted by format of the material. And otherwise, in our collection, the books on CD are in one place, the DVDs are in another, the magazines in yet another, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they would be spread apart.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And then some time went by,
yes.
I believe,
uh-huh.
until yet another separate collection came together,
right.
which is CLC, or Contemplative Living Collection.
Yeah.
How did that come to
okay.
be?
Okay, so that came to be a very similar kind of process, which was that we identified that there is a group of people in our community. So again, I think what you're hearing in all of these collections is that they were really based on us evaluating the interests and needs of our community,
mm-hmm.
And what we felt were some priorities and where this kind of collection might actually support what they have been doing. And the Warwick community has a long history of interest in different spiritual communities. It, you know, Thomas Keating actually had a major influence in his beginning of his centering prayer movement. We have the Shardavoyne and Garigedev
right.
group. We have, of course, churches and synagogues of various denominations. And we also have, like in many communities, an enormous interest now in the mindfulness movement, which can be somewhat secular, not necessarily religious,
mm-hmm.
But contemplative, of course. And so these are all interests that have sort of bubbling around each other. And these areas are all over the place in the Dewey Decimal System collection. So it seemed to me that it was an opportunity yet again to bring material of different formats together. And this was even a more interesting opportunity for me, because while with the MU collection, I might have developed all these collections. I developed this collection with the MU collection with the help of the mental health providers in our area. Orange County Mental Health, NAMI mm-hmm. Orange County, a whole bunch of people gave me suggestions. This Contemplative Living Collection was developed by also developed by various different people who have been involved in organizing and running classes and things in our community based on contemplation and meditation mm-hmm. and mindfulness from secular instructors to people who do this in the context of maybe their faith community. It was not meant to be, you know, one particular area. It wasn't Zen Buddhism or a Christian meditation approach. It was really a wide range of different meditation mm-hmm. and contemplation approaches. But it also seemed to me a wonderful opportunity to focus and showcase the work of probably one of our more famous residents.
Certainly.
Frederick Franck, who was an artist, a very famous artist, but he was also extremely active in this movement, this spiritual movement. He was very involved with popes and other people in creating a real a kind of a sense of all of our importance to each other and our needs to be connected and to develop those connections in a spiritual way. And so his illustrations, while his books are on a variety of topics, his presence here in Warwick is with Pachamon Terrace, which is this beautiful contemplative site here in our community. And I mentioned that as yet another example of how in our community we have a very, very rich history of people who have been focusing on this component. So it seemed like a natural fit. So that's was the origin
and
of that.
This now lives right next to poetry.
Yes, it does.
In the upper right corner, depending on which way you're facing.
On the main floor.
On
the little nook.
Little nice, comfortable nook with nice, comfortable chairs.
So it's, and this location, you know, finding locations in libraries is the hard part, you know, because mostly
signage.
We have to make sure people know where it is, but we also have to find the space and reorient all this material, and it takes a bit of work and effort to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ultimately, it's in the long run, it's really very valuable. I would like to say that, you know, this isn't the end of this for us. I think maybe you might be asking me that question, but you know, we're beginning to think about how we can maybe arrange more of our collection this way. Our nonfiction collection and the way people use libraries is changing. They're not looking to libraries as much for that quick fact piece of information. They can find those usually on their computers, and they're looking, I think, for an experience in a library that involves coming into an environment that's conducive to exploring and to serendipity and to finding information that maybe they weren't really specifically looking for, but that could inspire them to look even further into something. And so we have a young library school student here, actually, who's an intern, and she's actually been given the assignment to take our collection and make recommendations for how to arrange the rest of it this way. We haven't yet seen the results of her work, but I've given her that task to do, and I'm very anxiously awaiting what her recommendations will be so that we can consider yet how to continue down this path.
Excellent. And there's one more, maybe smaller little area, though, called Warwick Backyard.
Probably,
that's the newest.
Yep.
Interactive
Days. Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful artwork that was created to birds that you can actually touch and you'll hear their songs. So it's been established, you know, it's up on the wall, and the collection is surrounding that piece of artwork. But yes, that collection was created largely because we were adding some bird boxes to our grounds, and we have several little gardens here now, and we were trying to bring the outdoors in and vice versa. And then we realized that maybe a good way to showcase this work that we're doing there is to bring together material that would be of interest to folks who are outdoor enthusiasts who like to either bird watch, but there's night sky books there. There are books on building birdhouses. There's books on identifying other aspects of the natural order, flora and fauna, as we would call it in library speak. It's there. It's because it draws people who are interested in just, well, what's going on around here. You know, I don't necessarily want to know what the Rocky Mountains are like, but
and it overlooks one of our big picture windows.
Yes, it does, where you can see in the woods some of those bird boxes. And it has lovely plaque, because those boxes were actually donated during one of our foundation's annual appeals. People donated them in memory of someone. So it brings together a lot of different components of what a library is to its community, you know, not just books.
Well, you've described how the library is continually changing, adapting to the community. It's a living, breathing entity at all times. So I'm excited to see what happens next.
I am too. Can't wait to share it with you.
Okay, Rosemary, thank you for visiting us on Library Out Loud.
Absolutely. Thank you, Barbara.